20 plus years, I've taught the same lesson. What am I doing? Five times a day or six times, you know, it was like, there's got to be a better way. Hi, I'm Brian Zavotek, and this is the Kick Some Class podcast, the podcast designed to help you kick some class. So if you are a new teacher just trying to figure it out, or an old grizzled veteran that's trying not to burn out, you are in the right place. Each of these episodes is designed to help you have a greater impact in class, more time for your loved ones at home, and more balance in life. So stick around. We're going to get kicking some class today. Okay, guys, in this episode, I will have a special guest on with me in just a minute. He is a friend of mine, and he had a really unique experience. So we're going to be talking today about individualizing these experiences in education for students, because they are the ones who need to be the heroes of their own story. All right, guys. Well, welcome back to the Kick Some Class podcast. I got my friend Nate Kronk here with me. And so Nate has like a really interesting story. I'll let him tell it in just a second. but he's been able to kind of morph and change and still be successful in this ever-changing climate. And a lot of that, what I wanted to get at is, you know, how he saw his education, because he has a really unique story there, played into that ability to flex and move and to do things that are seemingly not necessarily parallel. So, Nate, you want to fill in the blanks there for me?
Sure. Well, Brian, thanks for having me on. So good to see you again. Obviously, we have a long history, for me as a teenager. But I was always passionate about music and communication, but I had envisioned myself as a rock star, went to university for that, and sort of hit the world and realized that was a harder enterprise than I imagined it would be. And so, you know, I think that vein of creativity from my childhood and from my teens, and we can talk more about that. I know that's what we'll get into a little bit here, but really helped me see how to connect the seemingly unconnected. And so over the years I've really had experience in recruitment, in sales, and my jobs, and then launched a copywriting business this last year. And so, you know, I've been a songwriter, I've been a salesperson, and then copywriting's kind of a convergence of those two things, of the creativity of writing and being in that sort of flow, as well as writing conversion sales copy that helps businesses get more leads, get more business, and find their audience. So I think that's been a really neat way to say, maybe I could find a way to take some passions and vocations and turn them into my own business. And that's been really, it's been really fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, you know, to hear you weave the thread, it's just a really cool thing to be able to look back on your life and to go, oh, so that, you know, that piece kind of makes sense. Or maybe at the time it seemed like a roadblock. And, you know, what was that like? Because, I mean, I just shared it with you like a week or two ago. You know, I had this memory come up where you recorded that music video, and I was like, man, this is so well done. And so what was that like when you kind of came to that place of, you know, roadblock with a music and performance career?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I started, you can see it on the video, I'm starting to get gray hair, quite a bit of gray hair here. And so I think age does something to all of us where we sort of realize, okay, you know, what am I passionate about and what's realistic? And I think that the shift happens to go more into reality as you get closer to death, not to get morbid on the listeners here, but it's just sort of the reality. And then I was in a cover band and wedding band, playing corporate gigs, and we were doing some nationally and locally on top of a full-time job, and just burning the candle at both ends for a number of years was a lot. In 2019, I played close to 150 shows with my band. Wow. And was working 40 hours a week with a sales job that had me traveling around the country. So there was a lot. I really barely had a personal life. I wasn't probably eating the best, you know, those sorts of things that catch
you. Yeah. Yeah.
And then COVID hit in 2020, which was the ultimate roadblock, you know, across the world, obviously, for all of us. And I was in Florida for what was supposed to be a 1 week vacation, and ended up staying there for 3 months because I didn't want to go back to the snow and the cold, and there was no need to go back to my office. So all of our shows were canceled. And so I had 3 months to sit around and sort of reflect and say, like, I don't know if this is what I want to be doing anymore. And so that for me was the genesis of dreaming up some other creative enterprise or a way, a career that I could find myself both passionate about and that had some real legs in terms of revenue or scalability or getting outside of dollars for hours, where with a show, I had to go, I had to set up, I have to play, you know, I have to be somewhere physically in that place. Whereas copywriting, brand messaging, sales, you know, coaching or consulting, which is where I hope this business will go, is a totally different animal. I could put out material. I can write for somebody on my own time, essentially. And that has some scalability. Whereas music, unless you're a major recording artist that you're getting great publishing and mechanical royalties, there's really not any scalability. Sorry, listener, if that's not interesting to you, but I think it's that idea like you said, that thread of music to sales and copywriting seems totally disconnected, but actually I think it served me really well. And I just started to think, how can I do something that isn't showing up in person and trading my time for money?
So, you know, so it's funny, that point that you made, I think we all got that great pause, and I don't know, you know, history will write the name of what we call this. So, you know, it's maybe in lieu of the Great Depression, which I hope is not it, you know, it's like that, the great reflection maybe. And you said that, and I felt the exact same thing, you know, and I think I just talked about this sitting on the couch with my daughter, she's watching Sesame Street and I'm trying to have a conference with teachers. And I'm just like, it hit me. I'm like, for 20 plus years, I've taught the same lesson. What am I doing? Five times a day or six times, you know, it was like, there's got to be a better way. And of course, I love my job and I still, you know, all the teachers that are out there listening, like they get it. You get something back out of that. But there is a point where you said it doesn't scale. And if it's burning you out, then maybe you either need to get out or you need to find a better way, you know, where there's give back. So I'm going to rewind this. So Nate was in my school district, back when I had hair before. It's gray, but it's gone, you know? And so, and there was a program called Venture in the high school, which we were sort of chatting about. It's way, way before its time. And so you were one of the people who took advantage of that individualized kind of program. And I was so new and really caught up with not screwing up and getting fired at 23 years old that I probably don't know as much about it as I should, other than that a lot of you guys that I knew that were in the high school at the time really benefited from that. So can you talk about that program and maybe how fed into your ability to weave that thread?
Totally. Yeah. That was an incredible program. So essentially, I'll go back a little further to give context. I was, I was raised with a family that I was hitting around kindergarten age. My mom said to me, do you want to go to school or do you want to stay home and do homeschooling? Because that was a big craze, particularly in the 80s with a certain brand of religious folks or Christians. And so that was my family. And so they said, do you want to do this? And they gave me a choice. Now, a 4 or 5 year old is going to say, this is what I know. I'm going to stay home. You know, I didn't really know. Yeah, exactly. I didn't know what to say. So I chose to stay home. And I was homeschooled for most of my primary and middle school years, which I think gave me that taste for individual learning and learning on my own terms, on my own time. I didn't really have to be told to go study or go read or go, you know, go play or figure something out. I was a curious kid and I'm still a curious person. And so I enjoy learning new things and picking up new information. So I think some of my other siblings might have been more of a challenge for my mom in that process, but I it was easy, you know, for me. I really enjoyed it. And so that by the time I got to high school, public high school, which was a major social and culture shift for me, the first 2 years were overwhelming, where I had to sit in my freshman and sophomore years of high school to sit in a room, listen to a person talk, stay on the same time frame as everyone else, kind of do the in-class work or the group projects and negotiate that was different for me. I just didn't have that kind of same mode of instruction at home. And so After I went to high school, that was a little cumbersome. I got used to it. I was able to fit in. I was able to, you know, find people that I connected with, many of who you know, obviously. But it was a challenge at first. And then I found the venture program. So the program you're referring to is I did my junior and senior year. And that was an independent study program for upperclassmen in the high school in two areas, in technology or in fine arts. So the fine arts director and the tech and science director, essentially Mr. Waterhouse and Mrs. DeForest, essentially said, we want to have a place where our students can go further because we grew up, we grew up in a rural area, northern New York. It feels way more like Ohio than it does like New York or Canada or southern Ontario, really.
It's Greenland.
Yeah, exactly. There's not, you're not going to go to a Broadway show and you're not going to go to, a science exhibit, that's going to blow your mind probably locally. So it was the idea, I think, was, hey, let's give our bright students. I'm saying that humbly. I just think I got in because I was around, but let's give our students who are doing well, reasonably well, the opportunity to go further in these areas. And the only way you can really do that is now what's being realized as experiential learning or externships, internships, co-ops, that sort of hands-on approach. So they launched this program well before I was there. And then I knew a bunch of friends in it. And the idea was, let's give these students the ability to take certain core prerequisites or core courses as independent studies. They still have to take the exams. They still have to check in periodically to make sure they're up on their assignments. But with that, they're going to have more time during the day and during the year to be able to focus on fine arts, which I did, and then technology, which many of my other friends did. So that was the idea. And then along with that, there came further responsibility, which had to be, had to be showcased. So we had a permanent hall pass. So no more asking to pee. That was a weird thing to me going to high school. I was like, I have to go to the bathroom. Can I just go? So that was one thing. And then the other thing that we got as a part of that program, or we had to do, was a showcase or an exhibition at the end of the year. Every student in that program had to then say, okay, with all of this extra time that you've given me, not only do I have to pass the exams and turn in the assignments for the courses that I'm doing as independent learning, but I then have to say, here's everything I've learned. And then you get graded on that. And that becomes a part of your grade on your transcript. So it was a phenomenal program with a lot of rigor. There were still checkpoints. So it wasn't just go do whatever you want, right? It wasn't school without walls with no accountability. It was really an incredibly structured program. But it gave so much more freedom, so much more structure. And I learned a lot and made a lot of mistakes through that program. And I think that's the best way to learn and to teach people how to be creative over a lifetime is to give them at least some freedom with boundaries to say, go explore. Yeah, you're going to screw up, but that's part of what it is to learn. I learned a lot about trust and responsibility in that program that I don't know if I could even name all the ways that that it really helped me. But one story I have is I was in the program for a full year, and then came time to senior year, and there was a new principal in the high school. And the fine arts director who led the program was a short, powerful lady. She was probably not even 5 foot, is not even 5 foot tall, but can command her, right? When she talks, everyone listens. And she'd been there for a number of years. Everyone in the district knew who she was and had the utmost respect for her, as did I. And, but the new principal was thinking about taking away some of our privileges as venture students, including the permanent hall pass. Well, my cohort were complaining about it, but really didn't want to do anything. So I thought I'll write a letter. So I wrote a letter to the principal. I had all of my cohort of students sign it, and I gave it to the principal's secretary, and I got a call from Mrs. DeForest, the fine arts director, who I did not include on this process because I didn't understand anything about bureaucracy, didn't understand anything about politics or how an organization like a school works. And I got called to her office and she goes, "What is this?" and she let me have it. But then she read the letter and said, "Listen, this is a really well-worded letter. I'm really proud of you for doing this. However, don't ever do something like this again. And so even in that moment, there was a realization I'd screwed up. She still gave me a positive affirmation and encouragement. This was really, you actually didn't mess up anything. However, this was still not the right way to go about it. And there was just so much trust and responsibility within the relationships I had with my advisors, with the teachers in independent study, to be able to let this group of students do something that they really cared about, which was going to make them work harder, even in the courses they weren't getting that normal mode of instruction in. And I think scaling that and being able to diversify the way that we teach the students is really huge. I know that's easier said than done, because the listener on right now, like, you all are thinking, yeah, but how do I do that? I have 30 students in my classroom. I have to teach them to tests or to standards that my state or district has. So how do we go about that? And that's probably easier said than done.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think, you know, like that trust and relationship, this keeps coming up over and over and over with teachers. Like I would say everybody knows this famous quote, you know, nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. Mm-hmm. But with students, you can't get buy-in, right? Like you knew that even though she gave it to you, that it was still a positive thing, right? And I realized that just some of this, that if you teach kindergarten, you're not giving little Johnny, this kid gets the worst of stories, right? Everything bad ever happens to little Johnny, but you're not giving him total freedom, because that trust and relationship is different, right? And so I think that's a really cool point, that as you move up through, we got to give over some of that ownership and control.
I think the one thing I think about often is that my grandfather went to a factory every day for work, and he actually died there in the mill that he worked. So, which is sad, obviously, but he went every day and he did the same thing. He was a cog, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I do think that industrial revolution age that we were in, that we needed to set people up for, is completely gone. I mean, you and I lived in an area that was. It was full of paper mills, right? You still live there, right? And there, you drive through a town, and you go to certain parts of that town, they're just empty paper mills. Like, they're just totally abandoned, and hardly anyone works there anymore. And that's just the reality of our current economy, at least in Western society. And so I really think that it's incredibly important that we shift education to prepare not only for the workforce, yes, the workforce, but also for a thriving society in general, and teach people how, we teach people how to learn, not what to learn, right? Like, you know, it's the information age that we used to have to, the information age is here. And so we don't really need to teach dates and facts and history as much as we need to teach people how to look at history, to be critical of information they receive, to look at, I mean, even in ways like reading journalism now on either and any side of the political aisle, I really don't care. Sides, yeah, exactly. There are so many adjectives or terms used that are inflammatory that really don't mean anything and have nothing to do. They're certainly not in line with journalistic integrity. And so even teaching students how to think critically about the information that they're constantly receiving would I think be helpful, instead of relying on bell goes off, factory worker takes a break, right? That's kind of the mode that we have students in. And I just don't understand how that's going to set us up for success in any way, not fiscally, not socially, and certainly not to create entrepreneurs who are going to be able to have side hustles or their own businesses, or are going to be successful in a future economy. I really don't understand how that's possible if we don't get off of this one-way track. Let's prepare future factory workers.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if you triggered it in me, like, that Seth Godin's linchpin is 100% like kicked my butt when I read that. And it's just preparing people for an economy that no longer exists, you know? So, that's so good, man. Almost seemed like I coached you on that.
I mean, we've hung out a lot. No, he did. Well, so and I'll answer the question about copywriting. So, copywriting is essentially, you know, selling behind a typewriter or a keyboard. So really what I help brands and businesses do of all types is to find a verbal identity. So first of all, you know, there's a visual identity. Everyone knows when they're starting a business, they need a logo and they need a website and they want it to look good. And they want to have a social media strategy. But before you start any of that, the question is, what are you communicating verbally? Because you really need the three things, a verbal, visual, and value identity, right? How do you really find those components? And so my job is to help brands and businesses find a verbal identity. So what are the words you're going to use and not use? What's the style you want to communicate with? Is it very, you know, down to earth, everyman, colloquial sort of, or is it a bit more, you know, higher ed, academia, you know, science journal kind of language? And how do we want to communicate to your ideal audience? And then finding that, you know, who is the audience? How do we get to them? And then how do you make sure that everything you do communicates your value and a call to action? So it's crazy how many emails we all get, right? And how many social media posts we all see that either have no value proposition. They don't actually say what the benefit of buying the product or service is. And there's no clear call to action. Like, hey, you know, I'm just using an example. Hey, I started a nail salon. Can't wait to help people. And you're like, that doesn't say anything. For, you know, you didn't say anything about who. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of nanny petty. Not true. But you know, I think of like, okay, with a nail salon example, how do you know where the person's located? Are they mobile? Do they have their own place of business? Who is the target audience? I would assume in most cases it would be, you know, women, but that's not always true, right? Who's the target client in that area and what's the radius of their business? Where can you go to their website? How can you book a service? Do you have an appointment booking online? And what do you do that's different than every other nail salon that might be cheaper in your area, right? How do you set yourself apart from the competition? So all of those things are questions. And obviously a nail salon is not my core client either. So I should have used a different example, but a solopreneur, an educator who's looking to go on their own. And for me, I'm working with people right now in real estate and higher education and tech, and just trying to help them find their identity so they can repeat it over and over and over. And the only piece of advice that I would give to people starting out, and I'm saying this because I'm reminding myself to do it more frequently, is to communicate the same message as much as possible. Because we know the thoughts in our head and we're like, I know what I do. I know why it's important. But the people that you know, even in your network of 12 to 100 people, might not really know what it is you do. And so communicating constantly to your audience the same core message of here's the value proposition, here's the call to action is really, really vital. And I think that a lot of business owners out of the gate, myself included, didn't do that or don't do that enough. So that's essentially what I do. And then I write the tactics. I write email copy. So if you want an email sequence, I write website copy. I write social media posts, and I do all blogs that help get, you know, SEO optimization. So I'm trying to write things that are trying to drive traffic. Long answer to a very short question.
Yeah, no. And it's funny because it took me quite a while to form that up. And when I say this, for those of you listening or watching, when I say, you know, hey, I'm here to help you maximize impact in the classroom, have more time for your family at home, and to help you live a better life, a more balanced life. I mean, that I feel like I have a unique experience to bring that across, or else I wouldn't say it. You know, 20 plus years in education, I feel like I have made an impact on students, but my experience with, you know, one-on-one coaching or group coaching and helping people personally develop and grow, you know, that impacts the three domains of your life. And that it was crafted over probably 6-8 months because of exactly what you said. I wanted to communicate that if you got one part of your life that's working and the other two suck, your life sucks, you know? And so you gotta attend to all of them. And I've seen too many teachers work their butts off. And then when they retire, they're dead in like 2 years, their health has faded, their family is toast. You know, like, what is that? And you said, I'm 47, man. Clock's ticking. And I look at it and I'm like, I want to be physically able to do anything I want to do. I want to be free. I'd like all that really hits a chord. And so I think it's good stuff, you know, and I kind of like the fact that you're almost 10 years younger than me. And so you kind of are seeing that. I see this midlife crisis, whether that's tied to COVID or not, as a gift. And people out there listening, you know, to your story, I'm sure there's teachers younger than you because you're old now too. The hair, no, but like, you know, we're at all different stages of life. If we can make this course correction and whether it's just a mindset or if it's actually get out and do something that feeds you, then go for it. Right. So, yeah, sorry to chew up the ending there, but
man. No, I love it. Well, but, it's great. What do you think the next phase in education is, or what do you think that teachers? What do you think?
Who's conducting this interview, man? you know what? I'll be honest. I think we're going back to what you saw. I think we're going to see an explosion in a weird, like hybrid of homeschool individualized education, where we're either going to lose so many teachers over the next 18 months that we're going to have to radically revolutionize what we do. Because this, as much as I love this conversation and, you know, remote stuff like this, because it's one-on-one and it's personal, this is not what hybrid education, you know, virtual, whatever you want to call it, looks like. There isn't this connection, and that's what you can't replace with technology. And so I think we're going to see that. I think we're going to see people looking for educational contractors maybe to come in and say, you know, hey, can you give me some high quality content for science, math, ELA? Like a lot of it's out there, Khan Academy and Generation Genius. And we've got these tools and people are starting to go, whoa, hold up. So maybe what I need is I need to hire a teacher for a pod of families in a region to do what Mrs. DeForest did for you, to call you out when you're being an immature moron, you know, to provide that character supplement to the family. Because honestly, you're the product of a family before you're a product of an education system. And I think, you know, I don't want to say how do you get in on that, but for me as an educator, that might be more life. You know, you sit down with 20, 25 students and talk to them about where they want to go, where their parents feel is valuable, like, oh, that's a different education, you know? I don't know if we're ready for it, but stop asking the good questions, man.
Yeah. I don't know if it matters if we're ready for it, unfortunately. It seems like technology and politics are at a sort of place of tension where there's just going to be where the magnets are going to repel one another. I feel like the old hierarchies, and I would have to get super deep. You can cut this out, but the old hierarchy.
It's the gatekeepers, right? You saw with music, people can sit in their home and be a YouTube star, 30,000-40,000 fans. Never once have to go to Nashville. I know you spent some time in Nashville or Motown. The gatekeepers are dead.
They're dead. Yeah, totally. And sometimes those antiquated systems, I mean, they'll fight back, but there's just no way to really hang on much longer. I mean, I see this in higher education all the time with the folks I talk to, that why would you pay $60,000 a year to sit on a Zoom call? I can't imagine that's
I'm only charging you 30.
I know. It's 30K to promote my copywriting business. NateKronk.com. No, it's true. There's that tension. And I don't know if it matters if we're ready for it. I don't think higher ed was ready to teach virtually, or even, you know, the folks on who are listening right now. Like, I feel like that is going to be, that's going to happen whether we like it or not. So I think there's a lot of room, and maybe even for people listening, that's a business and industry to get into, is start creating great content in your area of specialization, start putting it out and charge a little bit for it and see if homeschool families or other folks who want to need tutoring could make, you know, could make would pay you $5 for that intro course. And then raise your prices as it scales, right? I mean, I don't know if that works. You're the educator, but I think there's a lot of room for growth there.
Yeah, I'm interested to see where this goes. I mean, I think it's definitely possible. And like the higher ed thing, you didn't go to school to be a copywriter, but if you've got a relationship with knowledgeable people who care about you and are willing to push your trajectory, there are, I mean, maybe you don't want this out of your neurosurgeon, but like, you know, there's a lot of things that we can learn just by relationship. And I think it's how we learn. I forget who said it. We really, you only learn what you want when you want to learn it. Well, for me, that shot a lot of my public education because, but as far as like, you know, learning photography, videography, YouTube, graphic design, web design, like those are all things I wanted to learn. And I learned them when I wanted to, you know. Of course I needed a background and some skills, like you said, teach people how to learn. That's it, man. So yeah, awesome. I know that conclusion came off a little self-serving. Thank you for proving all the points that I've hoped about. No,
it's good. I really do want to say, like, I think I'm glad you're venturing into the space. And I'm really, to the teachers listening, I'm the educators listening, I definitely empathize with where you're at. I know these past few years have been horrific, and it was, you were already in a challenging situation in many districts around the country. So kudos to you all for staying the course. And if you decide to leave, there's no shame in that. But I think it's really, the work you're doing is incredibly important. You should be getting paid five times what you are. So really appreciate what you're doing for our world. You know, it's incredibly important.
All right, so that is our episode on Kick Some Class. But before you go, I do have something for you. If you really are in this place where you are burning out or you are really struggling to figure it out, I want you to go to kicksomeclass.com/freebies. And I've got a 5-step sort of gut check. It's a checklist that will help you to determine, hey, are there some simple things I can do to have a better experience in my job so that then I have a more positive overflow in my home life? And then I'm just overall having a happier experience in life. So that's the first thing. The second thing is this. Do you know somebody that maybe heard Nathan's story and there's something about his story that triggered, hey, I know somebody like that that had a really cool experience. Have them hit me up on social media at BaldSci. But also, like, what is it about this interview that maybe triggered something in you or helped you to understand your process better? Drop that down in the comments if you were on YouTube. If you're listening on the podcast, hop over to YouTube and throw something in the comments. Tag your friends, and I look forward to seeing you next time.